the side of his body. Large, strong hands with long fingers.
Miss Nora always said that I was in her will. She promised my job was for life, and that she would make sure I got my dues if anything were to happen to her. I'd seen her will when her lawyer came and brought a draft of it, just after her husband died. I knew how much she had put down and that I had to be in her service to receive it. It wasn't a secret. It had been her way to keep me working for her rather than go someplace else for better money.
Horatio's hand tightened a little further. And Peggy was frightened she might get dismissed because Nora had started to suspect her of taking the silverware. Kitty held her ground.
She started to get scared. I thought Peggy was on the level, that she was a good Christian girl. I always respected Miss Nora, too, when she was married. Then she started seeing Mr. Mortimer, breaking up a marriage.
Horatio shook his head.
It wasn't right. I told her that. Mr. Mortimer knew I didn't approve. Another reason to get rid of me. Then there was Miss Lorena's husband with all the morals of an alley cat. Miss Nora connived with him to keep it from Miss Lorena.
Little white speckles of spit formed at the corners of his mouth. She didn't want her daughter to be hurt, I suppose, Kitty said.
That's where she went that night. She crept downstairs to see Mr. Briggs. She gave him money to get rid of the latest girlfriend. Told him the girl had to go and he was not to upset Miss Lorena. Miss Nora wanted a grandbaby. She thought I didn't know, but I followed her downstairs and listened behind the door.
Horatio's nails were digging into the palms of his hands now, and Kitty could see his knuckles had turned a pinkish white under his dark skin. You confronted her after Rudolph had left, Kitty said.
She accused me of spying on her. I only wanted to make sure she was safe. She told me that was the last straw. She wanted me gone.
Horatio brought his hands forward, looking down at his fists as if seeing them for the first time.
I don't know rightly what happened next. She went to go past me, and I...
His voice cracked and tailed off. Kitty suppressed a shudder at the description of Nora's death. And Peggy knew you had been out of the flat that night? Kitty asked. She saw a faint shadow move at the top of the stairwell and knew that Matt was close by.
She knew that I wasn't telling the truth to the police when I said I had gone right to bed. I persuaded her that I had just taken some rubbish out. I knew I couldn't trust her, though. She was one of Rudolph's conquests. I'd suspected it for a little while, but I saw them together the night of the party. He used to leave her little notes. I had to act fast, as I couldn't be sure what she had told him already. I knew, though, that he would never say it was him that Nora was meeting. He had too much to lose, so for that part I felt safe.
Horatio dropped his hands back down, his voice taking on his usual calm, conversational tone. But Peggy had to die, Kitty said.
She was as immoral as Miss Nora. There was no choice,
Horatio said, just matter of fact. The elevator clanked into life, breaking the spell and startling them both. Before Kitty could move, Horatio caught hold of her arms and pushed her inside Nora's apartment, slamming the door closed behind him. Kitty caught a fleeting glimpse of Matt bolting onto the landing from the stairwell, but too late to reach her. Horatio locked the door and slid a chain across to secure it further. Horatio, I really need to go and join my husband. Today is our wedding anniversary, and it's Christmas Eve. Kitty decided to try to appeal to the man, even though she thought her chances of success were probably slim to none.
I'm afraid that's not possible right now, Mrs. Bryant. I will need you to accompany me out of here, so I can catch my bus.
Horatio appeared completely unmoved, his voice and demeanour as calm as if she had just stopped by the apartment for afternoon tea. Matt was hammering now on the door to Nora's apartment, and Kitty could hear him shouting her name over and over again. It's all right, I'm safe, she called back to him, desperate to reassure him. She also wanted to try to keep the situation calm so she could attempt to plan her escape.
Move away from the door, Mrs. Bryant.
Horatio moved forward, blocking her from trying to release the chain or try the catch. Matt stopped hammering on the door, and Kitty guessed her husband would be trying to think of another way to help her. She felt in the pocket of her thick woolen cardigan and closed her fingers around the keys Lorena had left at her father's apartment. She reluctantly obeyed Horatio's instructions and walked a few paces into Nora's spacious drawing room. Everything was now in boxes, the piano and furniture covered in dust sheets. Dusty marks on the expensively wallpapered walls indicated where pictures had been removed.
Goodness, you have been busy, Kitty remarked.
A small brown suitcase stood near the piano, stamped with Horatio's initials. There was nothing she could see at the moment that could be seized and used as a weapon.
I wouldn't wish to give Miss Lorena a reason to not pay me my dues. I am sure if she could find a way of not giving me the money from Miss Nora's will, she would do so, Horatio said.
A shiver ran down Kitty's spine. She was certain that Horatio's assessment of Lorena was correct.
Chapter 24. Matt's heart raced as the door of Nora's apartment remained firmly closed. At least Kitty had managed to call back to him that she was unharmed. He wished she had left Lorena's keys in the bowl downstairs instead of taking them with her. Then he could at least have tried unlocking the door. When he had finished on the telephone, he had realised she was missing just after he had heard the clank of the elevator cage doors. He had crept up the stairwell following the sound of voices, but had been unable to get onto the landing in time to prevent Kitty from being bundled inside Nora's apartment. Horatio's confession had been chilling. Matt had lurked in the shadows, hoping to find the right moment to jump out and rescue Kitty. Lieutenant Tanfield was on his way at least, and with extra manpower they should be able to break the door down if all else failed. Matt placed his ear to the door to listen. He could hear the muffled sounds of conversation, and he guessed that Kitty was probably trying to keep Horatio talking. Matt looked around the landing, trying to think of a way to get inside the apartment. He had heard Horatio sliding the bolt and chain across, so picking the lock wouldn't work. The bolt would probably be too strong. Overhead, he noticed a white painted wooden trapdoor in the ceiling, he assumed to provide access to a loft space. Perhaps there might be another similar hatch door inside Nora's apartment. He dragged over a large dark green ceramic pot containing some kind of ornamental plant and placed it beneath the hatch. Praying it would take his weight, he scrambled onto it, balancing precariously as he lifted the trap door and peered inside the roof space. He gripped the edge of the hatch with one hand as he fished his cigarette lighter out from his jacket pocket with his other hand. He used the flickering, faint glow from the lighter flame to peer into the gloomy attic. It was a low space, only perhaps 3 or 4 feet high. He could see there were some old boxes stored a few yards away and a rim of light that promised another trapdoor. The ceiling of the attic was flat, like the roof of the building inches above it, and he could see a quantity of cabling. He assumed that must have been installed when the building was converted to electricity. Matt dropped his lighter back inside his pocket and, using both hands, levered himself up into the attic. He winced at the strain on the old shoulder injury sustained in the Great War. The ceramic pot toppled as he pushed himself upwards, spilling soil and bits of plant all over the landing carpet. He hoped the sound had been sufficiently muffled so as not to alert Horatio that something was happening outside the front door. Once seated on the edge of the hatch, he retrieved his lighter once more to look towards where he thought he had seen the faint gleam of light indicating a second trapdoor. The palms of his hands were slippery with sweat as he assessed how to reach it. It was definitely an opening into Nora's apartment if he could get there. He would need to ensure that he picked his way along the supporting rafters or risk falling through the ceiling into the room below. The air in the attic was cold, and he was forced to place his lighter back inside his pocket so he could use his hands to make his way inch by inch along a beam towards the other hatch. The confined space and the darkness triggered his claustrophobia, another legacy from his time during the war when he had seen whole deep trenches collapse in front of him. The sticky dark mud drowning men and even horses when the boards had given way, burying everything. It was one of the things that haunted his sleep, alongside the cries of wounded men and the sound of gunfire. He listened out for Kitty and Horatio's voices as he inched his way across to the area where he had glimpsed the tiny rim of light. They were somewhere below him now, and he heard Kitty say something about a bus. Matt reached the trapdoor and patted his pockets until he located the small folding knife that he used for peeling fruit. He had found in the past that it was a useful tool when picking a lock or when prizing open something that was stuck. He always tended to carry it with him, a habit he was grateful for now. Matt applied it to the trap door, sliding it into the gap where the light was showing through and using it to lift the plywood door. Once he could grasp the edge of the door, he slid it quietly open just a small way so he could assess where he was within the apartment. Looking down through the narrow gap, he could see that he appeared to be above the bathroom. He recognised the green glass tiles and the black and white flooring surrounding the bath. Kitty and Horatio were still talking in the other room, their voices floating up to him where he could just pick out the odd word. Now he knew where he was. He lifted the trapdoor clear so that he could lower himself down into the bathroom. He wanted to avoid dropping down onto the floor from a height since the sound would undoubtedly alert Horatio, and he didn't want to put Kitty at further risk. The drop was also enough to turn his ankle if he landed awkwardly. The bath was more or less directly below him, and he thought that if he was careful, he might be able to balance on the edge of the bathtub to break the drop to the floor. It was inevitable that he would make some noise, but he had to hope that he could be down before Horatio came to investigate. Kitty heard a muffled thump from another part of the apartment. Horatio immediately looked around and then reached out and took hold of Kitty's arm.
Come with me.
Kitty didn't have much choice as he marched her through the drawing room and in the direction of Peggy's former bedroom and the bathroom. His hold was tight on the top of her arm, and she could feel the bony strength of his fingers even through the thickness of her blouse and cardigan. The door to Peggy's room was open, and she saw it was empty. The bed stripped, revealing the blue and white striped ticking of the mattress and the forlorn pillows devoid of their cases. Horatio's hold on her intensified as he opened the bathroom door, shoving it with some force so it slammed back against the stopper in the baseboard. Kitty noticed a dirty mark on the side of the bath, as if from a shoe, and glanced upwards. She stifled a gasp when she saw there was an open trapdoor above the bath. Had Matt made his way inside the apartment? And if he had, where was he? Kitty was given no time to think, as Horatio released his hold on her to position his arm across her throat. He forced her against the front of his body. He held her so she was looking out like a human shield. Matt! Kitty tried to call for her husband, but pressure from Horatio's arm on her throat reduced her intended shout to little more than a squeak. There was more noise outside the apartment now on the landing, with male voices and banging on the apartment door. Horatio pulled her backwards, retreating from the bathroom. Pressure from his arm against her neck made it difficult to breathe, and Kitty wheezed as she tried to take in air. She could smell the sweat from her captor's body, stale and odorous in her nostrils, as she tried in vain to pull his arm away from her throat. Someone was battering something hard now against the door of the apartment, and she guessed the police were trying to break in. Kitty tried to drag her feet, forcing Horatio to pull her along, the heels on her shoes scuffling the carpet. She continued to try to break free while desperately wondering if Matt was in the apartment, and if so, where he might have gone. There was a loud crash from the direction of the hall, and Kitty thought that the door might have given way. Horatio turned as if to see if anyone had entered the flat. Kitty was feeling dizzy now, the pressure on her neck crushing her windpipe. She desperately struggled to try to free herself. Dots appeared in front of her eyes and she felt herself beginning to lose consciousness when suddenly, without warning, Horatio released her. Kitty staggered forward and fell onto her knees, wheezing and gasping for air. She looked around to see Matt wielding a frying pan from the kitchen and Horatio lunging at him with a roar like an enraged bull. The sound of wood splintering came from the hall, and two uniformed policemen burst into the room, their guns out of their holsters and ready in their hands. Lieutenant Tanfield ran in behind them. Kitty was frozen to the spot as she watched Horatio grapple with Matt. Blood was gushing from a wound on the manservant's temple, and his eyes bulged with anger as he tried to land a blow on Matt. "Don't shoot!" Kitty's voice was croaky as she saw the police train their weapons on the men. She was terrified they would fire and hit the wrong man.
"Blackstock, give yourself up,"
Lieutenant Tanfield demanded. Matt and Horatio were rolling around on the floor now, engaged in a deadly battle. Kitty watched in horror as Horatio had his hands around Matt's neck. The frying pan lay discarded nearby, and Kitty forced herself to crawl forwards on her hands and knees to try to reach it. Finally, her hand closed around the handle, and she drew on her remaining strength to raise it above Horatio's head as he loomed above Matt, throttling him. As soon as she saw her chance, she brought the pan down as hard as she could on Horatio's head. The man fell forward onto Matt, relinquishing his grip. The police officers spied their chance and, after holstering their guns, placed handcuffs around Horatio's wrists. Matt rolled over to where Kitty was slumped against the side of the piano, the pan still in her hands.
"Darling, are you all right?"
Matt took her hand in his as he gazed anxiously at her. She managed a brief nod of assent before resting her head on his shoulder, unable to speak for a moment. Lieutenant Tanfield appeared to be barking orders at the policeman as they checked Horatio over. Once satisfied his prisoner was secured and apparently starting to come round, the lieutenant came over to where Matt and Kitty were recovering themselves, seated on the carpet. He crouched down on the floor beside them.
"Do you need a doctor?"
he asked, his sharp eyes assessing them.
"Kitty?"
Matt asked. She shook her head gingerly.
"I'll be all right," she croaked.
Lieutenant Tanfield straightened up and issued more instructions to his officers as they half-carried, half-dragged Horatio from the apartment.
"Are you both able to walk?"
the policeman asked. Matt assisted Kitty to her feet, and she clung to his arm while she regained her balance. Matt had lost two buttons from his shirt, and his lower lip was slightly swollen. Kitty knew her stockings were in shreds, and she had carpet burns on her knees. Her throat was sore, and she was certain that by tomorrow, bruising would appear on her neck and her arm. The lieutenant accompanied them in the elevator to Edgar's apartment. Once they were seated on the sofa, he went into the kitchenette to bring them both a glass of water. Kitty murmured her thanks and took several large gulps, the coolness of the drink soothing her sore throat.
"Right. Now let me have it from the top,"
Lieutenant Tanfield said, taking out his notebook. Kitty, with assistance from Matt, managed to croak out the entire story of what Horatio had admitted and what had happened when she had been listening out on the landing. The policeman's bushy eyebrows rose towards his hairline as she recounted Horatio's admission to killing Nora and Peggy.
"And you say he has confessed to posting the jewelry he stole from Mrs. Dangerfield to his family's home?"
the lieutenant asked.
"Yes, he hid the necklace, earrings and bracelet in a parcel disguised as a Christmas present, then wrapped it addressed to himself at his sister's house. He said it was insurance in case Lorena managed to get out of paying him the bequest from Nora's will,"
Kitty explained.
"Well, he won't be seeing a dime of that money now," the policeman remarked grimly. "Thank you both. I had better get downtown to get Blackstock processed. I'll speak to the desk about securing Mrs. Dangerfield's apartment."
The policeman put his notebook away in his pocket and headed off. Once the door had closed behind him, Kitty set down her empty glass.
Are you certain you're all right, darling? Matt asked. Can I get you another drink?
I would love a cup of tea.
Kitty looked at her husband.
I'm so sorry, Matt, about what happened. I swear I was just listening on the stairs. I never heard the elevator. He took me completely by surprise.
She lifted her hand and rubbed a smear of dust from his cheek. Her husband caught her hand in his.
I know. I should have known better than to suggest that you spied on him. Trouble always seems to find you.
If you hadn't, though, he would have been halfway across the state now. He would probably have escaped justice, Kitty said.
Matt gently kissed her fingers.
I'll go and make us some tea, and don't you dare move a muscle until I come back. I think we've had enough adventures for one day.
It's certainly a wedding anniversary to remember,
Kitty agreed with a small smile.
You can say that again,
Matt said with a laugh as he rose from the sofa.
Wait until your father hears about all of this.
Wait until Alice hears about it, Kitty said.
She didn't want to think about what her grandmother would have to say when she found out what had happened. Chapter 25. The remainder of their stay in New York seemed to pass swiftly. A quiet Christmas followed by more interviews with Lieutenant Tanfield, then a riotous New Year's Eve party, hosted once more by the gregarious Felicia. A trip to the Metropolitan Museum and shopping in the sales. Kitty waved Matt's white handkerchief from the ship's deck in farewell to her father until he was an indistinguishable speck on the dockside as the ship sailed out of New York. They slid past the impressive skyscrapers once more and the Statue of Liberty.
I'm so glad our departure is happier and less worrying than our arrival.
Kitty snuggled up against her husband. The biting cold air sent colour into her cheeks as she watched the city slipping past them.
Yes, it was a relief to discover your father wasn't at death's door. Although I must confess, I think we could have done without the murders.
The corners of Matt's mouth curved up in a smile as he spoke. Kitty shivered.
I still can't believe everything that happened. I really do think my father should keep better company.
She wrinkled her nose in disapproval. I sometimes wish he would return to live in England, but then I remember how much chaos he always seems to bring with him.
Matt chuckled. I know what you mean. Your father does seem to be a magnet for trouble.
Well, let's hope for a calm voyage back to England.
Kitty shivered again and turned to head below deck.
Absolutely. The crossing can be rough this time of year,
Matt said, as he followed her to go in search of hot coffee and a nice warm lounge. Kitty and Matt were on deck again a few days later as the ship sailed into Plymouth. Kitty's heart lifted as soon as the familiar coastline of England came into view, the lighthouse on the Ho just visible. They had telegrammed ahead to Robert Potter to ask if he or his father would drive to the city to collect them when they docked. The outside air, although still chilly, was distinctly warmer than it had been in New York. The sky was grey and there was a hint of drizzle as they waited for the ship to slowly glide into place at the dockside.
Do you see anyone?
Kitty asked as she peered out at the crowd of people waiting for the ship. Below her she could see various workers readying to settle the ship at her berth, motor cars and small lorries, horse and carts, as well as people waiting to meet passengers from the ship.
I think we shall have to wait until we disembark, darling. The porters will take our luggage, and we can soon find if we are being met once we're on dry land, Matt said.
Reluctantly, Kitty was forced to agree. She released her hold on the polished brass handrail and accompanied him down below, ready to disembark. It took a little while to make their way off the ship, having ensured their trunks had been collected, and to tip and bid farewell to the crew. Kitty scanned the crowds on the dock once more as she descended the gangplank with Matt. She wondered who would have come to meet them, Robert or his father.
Can you see someone?
Kitty stood on her tiptoes, trying to see a familiar face. There were drivers holding placards with various names who had clearly come to collect people. The porters were busy steering loaded luggage carts laden with trunks and carpet bags through the throngs of people. Matt was much taller than Kitty, so had the advantage of being able to see over some of the heads of the people around them. Suddenly, Matt stiffened.
I don't believe it. It can't be.
The next thing she knew, her husband had disappeared into the crowd, hurrying away as if his life depended upon it. Kitty remained where she was, wondering what on earth was going on. Matt scanned the crowd, looking for the man he had seen a few seconds ago. He had to have been mistaken. There was no way it could have been the person he had thought he had seen. Yet he knew if he didn't catch up to the stranger and put his mind at ease, it would trouble him for days. At first he thought he had lost him. The man looked so similar to others in the crowd, a black Homburg hat, dark grey overcoat and grey trousers. Then Matt spotted him walking quickly and purposefully away from the dock. Matt hurried after him, and as if sensing someone was behind him, the man quickened his pace.
Redvers!
Matt called the man's name. The man turned his head to look behind him, and Matt could clearly see his features, their gazes locked and Matt's breath stilled in his throat. It couldn't be, and yet it was. Older now, but it was definitely him. The man turned and broke into a run, vanishing from view into a myriad of warehouses, storage crates and alleyways, before Matt could gather his wits to follow. He stood for a moment, shocked by what he had seen, oblivious to the hustle and bustle around him, as he stared at the spot where Captain Redvers Palmerston had been. Slowly he shook himself back to the present and looked around to try and find where he had left Kitty and their luggage. Matt! Kitty was perched on tiptoe, waving to him. He headed towards her, his mind still reeling. Robert and Alice are here to collect us. Are you all right? You just ran off without warning. Kitty's expression was concerned as she took hold of his arm and peered up at his face. What happened? One minute you were there and then you were gone.
Yes, I'm all right. At least I think so.
He gave her gloved hand a reassuring squeeze. He hoped he was telling her the truth. Could he trust his own eyes? Or was his mind playing tricks on him? Robert helped the porter load their luggage into the trunk of the car, securing the larger pieces with straps to ensure everything was secure. Kitty and Alice were chattering away 90 to the dozen about New York, Edgar and Christmas. Matt found himself giving mechanical replies, unable to shake what he had just seen, or thought he had just seen, from his mind. He noticed Kitty glancing at him a couple of times before they got into the car to drive back home to Churston. Robert and Alice were duly shocked and fascinated by Kitty's tale of Nora and Peggy's murders and what had happened during their travels. Matt joined in only when he was appealed to by Kitty. He was shaken to his very core. Perhaps his experiences in the war were manifesting in a new way. Once Robert and Alice had delivered them and their bags safely home, and they had all been greeted by an ecstatic Bertie and an indifferent rascal, Kitty turned to face him. I'm putting the kettle on, and then I think you need to tell me what happened at the dock, she said firmly, once Alice and Robert had left. Matt sank down on one of the black leather and chrome armchairs in the lounge. Bertie placed his nose on his knee and waited for Matt to rub his ears. If anyone could make sense of what he had just seen, then it would be Kitty. If not, then he was indeed losing his mind, and he needed to see a doctor. Kitty returned a few minutes later, carrying a laden tea tray. She had removed her hat, and her blonde curls were still ruffled. Now, she commanded, taking a seat and peering into the teapot to inspect the progress of the brew. What happened? Bertie switched his attention from Matt to the tea tray once his nose detected a plate of biscuits.
Kitty replaced the lid on the teapot and poured them both a drink, adding milk before passing a cup to Matt. She waited until he had taken his first sip. "Well?" she asked again. Matt stared at the tea in his cup.
"I saw someone. Someone I thought I recognized," he said.
He wasn't even sure how this was going to sound. Kitty looked at him with narrowed eyes. "Who was it?"
"This will sound crazy. Perhaps I am going crazy, Kitty. I followed him thinking I had made a mistake, that my mind was playing tricks on me. I knew, though, that unless I saw his face and knew it wasn't who I had thought it was, I wouldn't be at ease," Matt explained.
Kitty picked up her own drink. "Go on," she encouraged. "Did you find him?" Matt nodded.
"I followed him away from the crowds. He seemed to realize someone was behind him. I called his name and he turned and looked at me."
Matt paused, his heart thumping now he had come to the difficult part of his story. "So it was the person you thought you knew?" Kitty asked. Her eyes were troubled, and he knew that she had sensed there was more to his story.
"I would be willing to swear on a stack of Bibles that he was Captain Redvers Palmerston. He was older, obviously, but I knew he recognized me as I had known it was him."
Matt's hand shook slightly, making his china cup clink against the saucer and some of the tea spill. "What happened?" Kitty's tone was concerned.
"His eyes met mine. I recognized the nick at the bottom of his right ear. He lost part of the lobe when he was injured. I swear it was him, Kitty."
Matt paused again. Kitty said nothing, waiting patiently for him to continue. Matt licked his lips before carrying on.
"He took off as if the hounds of hell were pursuing him, and I lost him in the alleyways by the dock."
Kitty frowned. "He was a brother officer?" she asked. Matt inclined his head.
"We were comrades in arms. We were wounded at the same time and cared for at the same hospital where I met Edith."
Matt drew a breath to carry on. It seemed so long ago now, recovering from his injuries and meeting his first wife, who had been a nurse at the hospital.
"Redvers was more badly injured than me. He took longer to recover. Everyone thought he was getting better, but he didn't believe them. He called me over the one day and gave me a ring and a watch. He insisted that I keep it and pass it to his wife for his son if anything should happen to him. The ring had been in his family for years, and the watch had been a gift from his own father."
Kitty frowned. "So what happened?"
"This is the part where you will think I have lost my mind."
Matt looked at her.
"He died a few days later. I went to his funeral, and when I was well enough, I took the ring and the watch to his widow."
Kitty stared at him in bewilderment. "I don't understand. Then how could he have been at the dock today?" Matt blew out a sigh.
"I don't know, Kitty. But it was him. It was definitely him."
Kitty surveyed him with her cool, blue-grey, level gaze. "You are quite certain?" she asked. Matt swallowed.
"I know what I saw. He turned to his name. I saw a dead man, Kitty. A man I saw buried."
She surveyed him levelly, as if making up her own mind. "I don't believe you are losing your mind, Matt. I think that we have a new mystery to solve," Kitty said. She squeezed Matt's hand and wondered what this coming year would bring them. If your heart was racing as Kitty and Matt tried to find and capture the killer, and you can't wait for her next case, sign up to Helena Dixon's mailing list at www.bookature.com/Helena-Dixon to be the first to know about the next exciting adventure in the Miss Underhay Mysteries series. This has been Murder in New York, written by Helena Dixon, narrated by Karen Cass. Copyright 2024 by Helena Dixon. Production copyright 2024 by Bookature, an imprint of Storyfire Limited. The moral right of the author has been